You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Sydney Foreman. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, August 12th, 2020.
We all need to be members of society. You have to be practicing that as a young person.
Later in the program, you will hear from Jeff Baldwin, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Bloomington. Baldwin discusses low-cost childcare options available for families in Monroe County.
Also coming up in the next half hour, two protests took place over the weekend, one in Bloomington and another in Martinsville. More on those protests later in the program. But first, your local headlines.
Here are three headlines you need to know today. WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforti filed today's local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Wednesday, August 12th. I'm Aaron Comforti. 667 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in Indiana on Tuesday, according to the Indiana State Department of Health, which also added 15 new deaths to last week's COVID-19 death tally, including one in Monroe County. Locally, Monroe and Brown counties each saw one new confirmed case yesterday, while Lawrence County saw five. Monroe County students begin the school year today 100% online. To help students who don't have internet access or a computer at home, the school district is taking a few steps to expand students' access to technology. The district is distributing tablets to elementary and middle school students and laptops to high schoolers. It's offering a number of free Wi-Fi options for students and parents as well, including 11 local schools which have Wi-Fi in their parking lots, Wi-Fi-connected buses that are parked at five or six neighborhood locations around Bloomington, and cellular hotspots are available to families and teachers as well. Even with all the extended options for Wi-Fi access, some students who don't have Wi-Fi and whose family can't bring them to one of the Wi-Fi options are at risk of falling behind. The Monroe County School Corporation is also offering other services like meal delivery and virtual counseling. To learn more about the reopening plan, you can go to their website at mccsc.edu. Pantry 279 will be closed today, August 12th, due to a nearby gas leak. Pantry 279 director Cindy Chavez encourages people to check the food pantry's Facebook page for further announcements. You can find more info on Pantry 279 and their services on their website at pantry279.org. That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
The Monroe County Community School Board discussed their 2021 school year budget during their August 11th work session meeting. Assistant Director of Business Operations Adam Twilliger said the average daily membership state payments have been trending upward since 2012.
That projection is just driven by a general trend line of every year since 2012. The average change is about $1.3 million a year. So if trends had kept up like they were, we would anticipate receiving $1.3 million in additional funding for the 2021 budget. And of course, all increases over time reflect a variety of a couple of factors. One of that could be increases to state aid and or increases to student counts.
Twilliger presented 2021 tax levy rates. He said tax levies are the overall monies raised from property tax. Director of Business Operations John Kenny said the advertised number is likely to reduce before final approval.
Once it's been advertised, the DLGF locks in the advertisement they've seen as the highest amount that you're allowed.
Twilliger said MCCSC schools' overall tax ranks in the bottom 10 of Indiana schools. Board Member Sue Wanzer asked Kenny how the current economic status would affect school funding.
How will our pandemic and unemployment and everything else in this school corporation affect our state ADM payments, since those are based on taxes, state taxes? Do you have any idea, or has the state given you an idea if we're going to be losing some funds?
As of right now, the state's indicating that they intend to give 100% of the basic tuition support amount. The full taxes for the year in terms of property taxes and the three other state taxes, CVET, LIT, and the other tax, the indications are right now that it's the same as any other year, just delayed by that first payment that was waited until July 15th.
Superintendent Dr. Judith DeMuth said no definite funding cuts for schools choosing to teach online, as in Senator Rod Bray's letter, have been announced. However, she said Governor Eric Holcomb has mentioned he would not let schools teaching online lose funding. Kenny said the next budget hearing will be September 24th.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton will join city and community partners in another conference call on Wednesday, August 12th, discussing Mayor Hamilton's Recovery Forward initiative. Tomorrow's conference will include Adam Wasson, Director of Public Works, Tina Peterson, President and CEO of the Community Foundation of Bloomington and Monroe County, the city's Assistant Director for Sustainability, Lauren Travis, the city's Local Food Coordinator, Rachel Beyer, and Steve Kramer, Weatherization Program Manager at the South Central Community Action Program. City leaders will be answering questions about energy efficiency, bike, pedestrian, and transit improvements, and more.
Ellettsville Town Council discussed a mass gathering request for Campbell's Park shelter homes during their August 10th meeting. Event petitioner Laura said the reservation request was for a free community event. However, the attendance number was unknown. Town Attorney Darla Brown said the Monroe County Health Department restricts outdoor gatherings to 150 people.
So if they at all anticipate that there may be more than 150 people, they should go get an exemption from the county, because if more than 150 people show up, they'll be in violation of the county's public health order.
Brown suggested the petitioner discuss crowd-limiting strategies with the county health department. She said order violation could result in a fine. Councilmember Scott Oldham said the event is in need of more written plans.
The only time that we ever let the entire park out is for Fall Festival, and that requires a written safety plan and a written security plan, which this doesn't have. Whether this intends to reach the capabilities of mass gathering or not, I don't know, because she doesn't know. Part of the issue you have is you have baseball down there those days as well, so that's going to add to your numbers whether you knowingly know that or not. They're going to be there, and there's the only way you can remove somebody from the area is one of the shelter houses. If they decide they're going to plop down on the grass, you don't have the ability to remove them. I'll be honest with you. I think your numbers are going to be well in excess of what you think they're going to be. You know, you're all over the map because you really don't know, and that's not your fault. That's just the way it is. We simply do not have the security resources to deal with something that grows this big without calling in extra people on a regular day. It's just not there.
Oldham said there was not enough thought for pedestrian safety. He said Ellettsville does not have enough disposable staffing to protect the event. The petitioner said hiring security could be a possibility and decided to replan the event for October of this year.
Indiana schools who choose to open up virtually for the coming year may face funding cuts. According to a WIBC news report, Senate President Pro Tem Rod Bray, quote, is warning schools that they could have their funding cut if they offer in-person classes, end quote. The report states that schools who only offer online options could see more than a 15% cut in funding per student, according to state law. 35 Indiana school districts and 8 charter or private schools have already opted for online-only learning for the safety of students and staff. Bray warned schools that if less than half of their classes are offered in person, schools can expect these cuts. In the report, quote, Republican State School Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says she's disappointed at Bray's letter and warns it could warp schools' decision-making on whether it's safe to come back, end quote. Brady responded to many statements against his address by saying he did not intend for the funding cuts to be a threat to schools. Gary Senator Eddie Melton called for Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb to issue an executive order guaranteeing schools all of their expected funding this year, regardless of teaching method.
Now, with three local headlines, we turn to WFHB correspondent Alex Dieterer.
Bloomington restaurant Lenny's reopened yesterday after closing in March. The restaurant will be open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sundays 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. According to Indiana Public Media, Lenny's will be enforcing the state's mask mandate, which will be mandatory as customers are walking to and from tables and as the servers are approaching the tables. In addition, all customers will have their temperature checked at the door, and those with a temperature above 100.4 degrees will not be permitted inside the establishment. Instead of hard-copied menus, customers will scan a QR code to access the menu virtually. The Big Ten Conference has officially suspended its upcoming football season, with hopes of returning in the spring. This decision can be felt near and far in Indiana, by businesses, fans, and college students alike. According to CBS4Indy.com, front house manager at the Tap, Jacob Langfield, said, quote, If they can get it done in the spring, that would be awesome. There is plenty of appetite for it, and I think a lot of people are wanting it. Hopefully, the Tap is a good place people still want to come and watch games. There are still going to be a lot of sports on. There's NBA. End quote. It is still unknown how the virus will be affecting communities in the spring, but if the football season returns this spring, Purdue speculates that it'll be a shorter season. After weighing health risks caused by COVID-19, the 7th annual Bloomington Pride Fest was moved online. Starting tomorrow until August 29th, Bloomington Pride will be hosting its first annual virtual 5K to encourage community members to get active while supporting Bloomington's local Pride community at the same time. The course starts and ends at Upland Brewing Company, and a 10% discount will be taken off any orders that present the 5K registration receipt from the day you register through August 29th. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
Over the weekend, a Black Lives Matter rally was held in Martinsville. Also, pro-police protesters gathered in Bloomington, where they were met with counter-protesters. We turn to WFHB correspondent Katrine Bruner for more.
On Saturday, August 8th, at around 11 a.m., dozens of bikers and motorists were seen passing through downtown Bloomington as a part of a Defend the Police caravan. According to a post by the Bloomingtonian, a number of people showed up at the courthouse to counter-protest the caravan. Two police officers watched nearby from the parking lot near the First United Methodist Church, but there was no police presence at the courthouse square. One large group of bikers was seen making circles around the courthouse, the police headquarters, and the Monroe County Sheriff's Office. Many waved American flags. After the activity died down and most of the group left, a man appeared at the courthouse carrying an AR-15 rifle and a Trump 2020 flag. Protesters yelled in warning, and one person from the Black Lives Matter protesters retrieved their own AR-15. Many people in the courthouse area at the time were holding signs in support of the Black Lives Matter movement and against the Defend the Police protests. One man held a painting of Breonna Taylor, who was killed by the Louisville Police Department, up in the air. In Martinsville, Black Lives Matter activists marched around the Morgan County Courthouse Square Saturday. Many armed counter-protesters surrounded the square and at various points insulted the protesters. Some people were held back by others or by the police. One man said to bystanders in a vehicle, quote, They won't get much support here. This isn't Democrats like Bloomington, end quote. One member of the Martinsville Police Department told the Bloomingtonian that Martinsville, quote, doesn't deserve the reputation it has, and most people from the city would not protest against Black Lives Matter protesters, end quote. Mayor of Martinsville, Kenneth Costin, stood on the square and reported to the Bloomingtonian that he had no advance notice for the BLM activists to hold a rally Saturday. The crowd began to disperse at 6 p.m. Saturday. For WFHB, I'm Katrine Brunner.
The Boys and Girls Club of Bloomington are offering child care for $20 a week per child. Jeff Baldwin, executive director for the organization, talked to Cade Young about helping children work virtually. Here is that telephone interview from Monday afternoon.
Tell me a little bit about low-cost child care options available right now at the Boys and Girls Club.
Well, really what you're talking about is a full-day program that will support parents and families who are faced with a situation where they have to be back to work in order to continue their livelihood. And they need a place for their kids to be, with school not being open to face-to-face school activities and providing virtual programming. We are providing that service, that all-day service from 8:30 to 5:30, so that they can work and provide for their families. And also, it's beyond that, it's just the importance of having kids be in a nurturing growth environment that's going to support their emotional development, their physical development, their mental development, that is so critical at this particular time.
So how have you worked with the City Parks Department to develop this program?
So we've worked with the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department and have been for quite some time throughout this crisis to see how we could work together to provide a very similar need. And so they're offering a program that's somewhat similar to ours and supporting, again, families in a way that gives them a break to work or run errands or, do some things like that that are important to them. And also, again, give kids all the support that's part of becoming a well-rounded and healthy child. So they're just pitching in with us and joining us, and we're excited to be involved in that endeavor with them.
Absolutely. Now, could you tell me about the $30,000 grant you received from the Learn Fund at the Community Foundation of Bloomington and Monroe County?
So excited to receive that seed funding from the Community Foundation as part of the Learn Fund to allow us to expand our youth pod structure from what has been over the summer, roughly 15 to maybe 20 pods, to over 30 pods that we'll be using to meet the needs of roughly 400 kids in our community. If not for the Community Foundation and that initial investment, we would not have been able to make that bold step to head down that path. So grateful for them, so grateful for IU Health and their initial investment in the Learn Fund to support so many families in this community that very much need to have full-day care for their children at this time.
Why is this service so important now, while some families are struggling financially due to the COVID-19 pandemic?
I think, first of all, it's important to define low cost. And in this situation, for many people, they're going to want me to say it twice, but we're actually offering full day care for families for an entire week for $20. So it's 8:30 to 5:30 every day, 5 days a week, for a grand total of $20 per day. And that happens because of the great support that so many people provide the Boys and Girls Club in this community financially. And then layer on top of that, the great support that we're receiving from the Community Foundation. And why is it important? Well, there's certainly, if you can imagine a single mom and she's got two or three kids and the pressures that she has to maintain employment, she doesn't have a lot of options. We hate the thought of those kids staying home alone, unsupervised, or in some situations it just may not be healthy. That certainly is another concern of ours. It's a stressful time for families, and families that are under stress can find themselves heading down some very dangerous pathways. And we want those kids to be in safe situations. So certainly that's an important aspect of this. And then, beyond that, it's just that, that the socialization that children need to have, that's so critical, that we all need to be members of society. You have to be practicing that as a young person. And so that, needless to say, is critical you know, we're just looking forward to that opportunity to help so many people in this community that, like I said, need to get back to work or maintain employment to keep their family engine moving.
And to follow that up, how will you keep children safe with this program?
Yes. So really, when the crisis broke in March, you know, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Bloomington turned very quickly to realize that they needed to find a way to serve kids in a pod kind of environment. And we have developed an extensive policy and procedure manual for our youth pod model that takes into consideration all of the recommendations that the CDC has put forth. This particular youth development model was approved by IU Health and also our local Monroe County Health Department. Some of the examples of things that we do is we're keeping kids isolated in these pods so that they're not exchanging or even double use using spaces within the club. So it's a very isolated circumstance, having their own restroom wherever we can, having external exits and entrances into the facility that aren't used by other members of the club if we're functioning within a club. Hand washing every 45 minutes in a regimented fashion. Masks being worn while they're indoors it's a non-negotiable. Maintaining 6-foot distancing, having their own small bin of program materials from crayons to pencils to paper to scissors, whatever that may be, and only that individual child touches those items. No other person touches those. And then, of course, very extensive regular cleaning throughout the day and deep, deep cleaning in our facilities at night. And that just scratches the surface with all that goes into providing a very safe environment for kids and staff and families.
And the last question I have for you, Jeff, is how do you intend to support the virtual learning process for children?
And it's a great question. How do we support that? I'll lead off with a very basic statement, and I'll back it up with some explanation. We're going to do our very best. And the reason that I say that is that in any given pod, we may have multiple different grade levels, and we have a strong local school system, and all of those teachers and all of those grade levels are given the autonomy to cover their curriculum as they see fit. And so the reality of that, though, is that if I had 5 different fourth graders in a particular pod and they all came from different schools, when they did their virtual learning, there would be very little commonality on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, in a pod of 10 to 15 kids and 2 key supervisors in that room, the best that we can do is to be looking over their shoulder and offering them guidance and leadership where we can provide it. So is it like a parent sitting at home with a child one-on-one at a kitchen table at home? No, it's not. But we are going to do our very best to support what it is that they're doing with their virtual learning.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff Baldwin, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Now it's time for Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted by Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Contact tracing is a thing now, and it's probably coming your way sooner or later. When someone tests positive for the COVID-19 virus, health officials around the country are starting to try and find out who that person might have encountered in person and thus might have infected, and warn those people to get tested. This kind of thing isn't new. It's been done for years for other diseases, including tuberculosis, measles, mumps, HIV, and foodborne illnesses like salmonella. But it's especially important for the coronavirus pandemic because infected people may not know it, may not have any symptoms, and could spread the virus to others without realizing the danger. Here in Indiana, contact tracing efforts have been getting off to a slow and rocky start, with county health authorities trying their best to work on it, and, since last May, the Indiana State Department of Health attempting to set up a coordinated statewide effort. So far, they've been unable to talk with 20% of infected Hoosiers and are still trying to find enough people and refine procedures and data collecting methods to make it all work. But if the legitimate health officials are slow getting going, the scammers are not. Contact tracing offers some juicy opportunities for bamboozling people because they push the fear button so easily. If a real contact tracer gets your name and gets in touch, it will be a phone call or an email, and it might be a text message saying someone will call you. If it's a fake contact tracer, you'll probably get an email or text with a link to click. Don't click any links. Real contact tracers don't send them. Only fake ones do. And if you fall for it, you might get spyware or even ransomware installed on your phone or computer. But scam contact tracers have been known to use the phone, too. Here's where you can spot the difference in the information they give and want. Legit contact tracers will identify who they're working for, what county, what state, whatever. If they don't, ask, and if they won't, hang up. Legit contact tracers need to verify your identity. They'll do that with your name, your address, and possibly your date of birth. They may ask you where you work and how you would like to be contacted in future. They will want to know if you can give them the names of others who you have seen in person since the possible infection occurred. The scammers want much more information. Anyone asking for your social security number, your credit card number, your bank account number, or your immigration status is a crook, and anyone who even mentions money is a fraud. And once again, don't ever click on a link. The real people will never send you one. Help health authorities, but beware of the bogus ones. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti, Jake Jacobson, Alex Dieterer, Katrine Bruner, Cade Young, and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Cade Young.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent local news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You too can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Cool Solutions, coming up next on WFHB Community Radio.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB Local News Archive at wfhb.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB Local News. We are local, longer,